the long-term thesis for coal, like, really hasn't changed. We do have this little bit of new supply coming on right now, but when you start to get into the back half of the decade, we're going to start to see mine depletions, and those aren't insignificant. So there is this, you know, three-headed monster of, you know, peaking China steel demand and rolling over with a growing India. We have yet to see a European recovery. I think we will. We're about ready to end the Russia-Ukraine war. I think Russia will be a positive, Ukraine will be a positive inflection. We're going to have to rebuild the country. Steel is going to play some role in it.
Matt Warder, good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, Andy. Thanks for having us back on, and you know, happy to come in and talk all things coal for a little while for your watchers, viewers, and listeners, and all that sort of stuff. So, there's been a lot that's been going on. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, well, I gotta call all of that out because you do not get enough credit. You are the coal guy, and that's my thing. Is like, I don't know. It's been about 18 months or 2 years ago I first had you on. And I don't remember how I found you, but I think it was Trader Ferg. That's who it was who name dropped you to me. And I had no idea who I was talking with. And then also just the views you would get. So kudos to you. And I just want to give you a lot of credit, but let's talk about coal. Where we're at in the market and how you see things. It's been a destructive past 12 months, if you would. 24 was tough. But let's give a 30,000 foot view on 25 here.
Well, it's almost exactly 12 months, right? This was the point in time last year. Well, this is the point in time every year where, you know, you start to get a correction into shoulder season for thermal coal and for met coal. Restocking is mostly done. So this is the point in time we should expect prices to begin to sort of come off. And they're doing that right now as well. You know, I wrote to... In our metallurgical coal outlook for the coal trader at thecoaltrader.substack.com, or you can read it at thecoaltrader.com, either one, that, you know, I love the movie The Big Short for a lot of reasons. You know, the first quote in that opens the movie is, you know, it ain't what you don't know that hurts you. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so, right? And that's kind of what happened to us last year. Like, we knew that we would have a correction into May or June. We knew we had Indian elections. We knew that after that was over, we would see some sort of, you know, restocking activity that would push up prices. And we were even fortunate enough in that transition from May to June to July. I shouldn't say fortunate, but we had the Grosvenor fire in Australia. Followed by the Longview fire in the U.S. that took, about 6 million tons, 7 million tons out of the market. And, you know, traders and everybody got incredibly long at that point in time. But what we didn't know that just wasn't so was that, you know, China, which, you know, when I was at Woodback, we projected for peak steel in 2024 as far back as 15 years ago. So, you know, we've known for more than a decade that the pace of growth that China was on in the steel industry was going to peak last year. And instead of peaking in December and then rolling over, it peaked early in the year, and we didn't really get a big push for restocking from them at all. So, you know, everybody got incredibly long post-Indian elections, and Indian demand didn't materialize. Everybody got long post the Grosvenor fire. In Chinese demand, Chinese stimulus didn't really materialize. We had a little bit in September, you know, a little bit of a pump fake to get, you know, met markets up there. Thermal markets did fine for the bulk of last year. But after that, just the wheels started to come off on met. And what we all thought was going to be a bearish 2025, because there's more supply coming on for coal, some of the projects that have been, you know, built over the past 4 or 5 years are hitting the market now. Peabody Centurion, Warriors, Blue Creek is hitting the market. Pembroke's all down. So there's a whole bunch of supply that's coming. Coupled with what we knew was going to be a Chinese slowdown. So how it worked out was the Chinese slowdown got pulled forward into, you know, the middle of 2024. And that kind of ruined our ability to get, you know, one last big pump out of the met market. And now we're sitting at what I think is looking like the trough of the cycle. We're going to see that here over the course of 2025, maybe a little bit into 2026. You know, if we look at what got us here, which is really the Chinese steel market. Well, Chinese steel bottomed in September. You know, real estate bottomed last year. You know, steel producer, Chinese steel producer equities bottomed in September. You know, hot rolled coil for the U.S. bottomed in July. So the steel space has started to inflect. That's really positive. But now what we have to endure is this rise in supply. Okay. Production is heretofore underperformed. Now we're going to get some more tons coming to the market. And for the most part, a lot of these tons are, you know, on the met side are higher volatile coals, weaker coking coals comparative to PLV. A lot of semi-soft coking coals and, you know, high vol A, high vol B in the U.S. Those are not coking coals that you build primary blends around. You build them around coals that have really high strength, whether that's, you know, premium low vol or premium mid vol, whether you're getting them from the U.S. or from Australia or Canada or from Russia, for that matter. That's really what we need to see in the market. But that high vol component has been so saturated, and there's been so many tons that have been resilient here until now, that it started to, you know, blow out relativities. We saw very weak realizations from BTU Shoal Creek. We saw very weak realizations from the development tons that are coming out of Blue Creek on Warriors Coal. And we've just gotten to this part where, well, we need to either see some of those tons come out of the market. And they did to some degree. Traders who had semi-soft on their books actually dumped it into the thermal market, into the Newcastle thermal market here over the past few months. And so we've seen the Newcastle premium to European thermal coal just evaporate over the course of a couple of months. And so, you know, now we're at a point where supply has got to rationalize. I'd like to see some supply cuts. Both on the thermal and on the met side. I think Glencore alluded to that in their call today. So that's kind of what we have to see. We have to see China cut some steel capacity eventually. We've got to see some producers rationalize higher cost production. We're probably going to see another bankruptcy or two in the U.S. of private producers, you know, private higher cost mines that produce these, you know, comparatively weaker coking coals, high vols, those sorts of things. That's got to rationalize before we have a real meaningful turn. And I think we'll see that here over 25 and 26. You know, I think 27 will probably be the first year we're back, you know, kind of on the upcycle for the next go round. Now, I should caveat all that saying the long-term thesis for coal, like, really hasn't changed. We do have this little bit of new supply coming on right now, but when you start to get into the back half of the decade, we're going to start to see mine depletions, and those aren't insignificant. So there is this, you know, three-headed monster of, you know, peaking China steel demand and rolling over with a growing India. We have yet to see a European recovery. I think we will. We're about ready to end the Russia-Ukraine war. I think Russia will be a positive, Ukraine will be a positive inflection. We're going to have to rebuild the country. Steel is going to play some role in it. You know, they're going to need power. So I think you might see some new coal plants built. We're going to, domestic U.S. thermal coal is probably going to have a decent year with all the power demand that we have. So there, even amidst all the bearishness, there's still some pretty positive narratives, I think, even for this year. And then over the longer term, really, really not much has changed. By the time we get to 2030, and you start looking at supply versus demand, you know, we move back into deficit here in the back half of the decade. as well. You know, is it going to be as generational an upswing as we saw from COVID to, you know, the Russia-Ukraine war? No, it's going to be that. But, you know, I think a lot of these companies that, you know, ran from, you know, single digits up to, you know, mid triple digits and have corrected by 60% since, you know, I think we'll see some doubles and triples on those as we get into 27 and 28. So like for me, I kind of want to think about, you know, starting to, you know, size up coal a little bit toward the end of this year, you know, toward the middle of next year, probably Q2 next year. I think I'd like to be pretty full size, maybe not as overweight as I was back in 21, but starting to get to the point where I think we'll have a pretty good future in front of us. Hope that all makes sense. I mean, this is a huge can of worms to open up and try to unpack.
Yeah, it really does, though. Now, you did a great job explaining that. I guess my question would be, you said a couple of things. I think this is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, a Chinese, Indian, you know, where are they at, if you would? I think that's going to be a lot of driving this. But then you also say, and I just want to work that out a little bit more. And then you talked about how we're going to have deficits of mines. Do you mean here domestically, or do you mean across the globe?
No, across the globe. When you look at supply versus demand, there starts to be a gap. You know, when we get into 27, 28, toward the back half of the decade here, You know, right now we're in surplus, and specifically we're in surplus in the lower quality portion of the market. You know, higher quality material is still pretty tight. I mean, premium low volatile met coal is still 190 basically.
Yeah.
Both on the physical side and on the futures. And you know, the curve, the forward curve, implies that we're going to stay somewhere between, I mean, probably 215, 220 on the upside, to on the low side. I think too many operations begin to go cash negative right around the $160 PLV mark. There was a note in Platts the other day where there was an Alabama high vol cargo that got sold for $144 at the port, which is awful. The U.S. East Coast high vol index right now is like 175, 180. So there's a, you know, $30, $40 delta between those two metrics. And, you know, that's been pretty typical of Asia. I mean, Chinese steel margins are still underwater by 50 bucks a ton. Indian steel margins are still underwater by 20 bucks. So as long as they're not making money, they're going to try to buy as much cheap stuff as they can. And they're going to, you know, make the case that they just can't afford to pay, you know, premium prices for anything. Now that said, you know, when you buy a bunch of, you know, lower quality material, you do need to make up for it from a quality perspective by buying either more low vol, more PLV, more US low vol, some kind of Canadian mid vol, some kind of coals that contribute strength to the coke blend. And that's part of the reason why we've seen, you know, high vol or low vol prices kind of flatten out at around the 190 mark, whereas the relativities for these other weak coals have begun to deteriorate somewhat.
Talk a little bit about new administration. They're so far talking about a lot of tariffs and that sort of thing. What are you seeing? How is that going to affect the market? And is it going to be, I mean, obviously, that would be supportive of prices you hear in domestically, correct? Or just
domestically, yeah. So, you know, I think U.S. not rolled coil prices are like at 850. I mean, would that we had known this when everybody was negotiating domestic contracts back in September, right? Because, you know, you probably could have supported a 170, 180 price at the mine and still been able to make money making steel. Tariffs are tough because what I learned during the first Trump administration was stop trying to predict what they're going to do and how other people are going to react. Every time I tried to do that, I was wrong. So I'm not even going to bother with it here this time around. We just have to be able to react in real time and be flexible with, you know, with our outlooks. I think this is for analysts, this is a better 4 years to run scenarios. What if this happens?
Yeah.
And just, you know, run that off of base cases rather than try to take some definitive view on how fallible humans at the geopolitical level are going to react to some other fallible human in the U.S. I think it's just, you know, for me, that's probably a fool's errand. Not worth much to try to figure out on the coal side anyway.
Yeah.
You know, with regard to steel, I mean, you know, we put off tariffs on Canada and so we're not going to do that. But then we put tariffs on steel and aluminum, which is, a big portion of our imports from Canada and Mexico. So, you know, the policy angles on this, like they just, they're not going to make any sense. No point in doing it. Abroad, I don't know what the reaction is going to be. China's already put, 10% tariffs on imported coal from the U.S. On the met side, it's only about like 10 million tons. It's not a lot. And it's going to be less this year anyway.
Okay.
Because China's production underperformed last year. So, you know, probably half that is the combination of Consol's or Coeur's Bailey mine and Coronado's Buchanan mine, which have very well-developed markets in China. And then the other 50% of it is a, smattering of, Alabama operations and a little bit of everybody else, basically. But if you're clearing high vol into Asia right now, they are absolutely hosing you on the freight differential. You're not getting the same realizations as you would be selling to Europe or selling to Brazil, just because that arbitrage spread into the Pacific Basin is closed. I made the argument that if an end user has to cross a basin in order to find supply, you shouldn't be charged for that freight differential at all. But, what I think doesn't necessarily matter. Yeah. Those things, the end result is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get too far down the tariff bubble, trying to figure out what's going to happen. I think it's more, they'll definitely have an effect. What I'm more interested in is how that begins to adjust trade. So when the Russia-Ukraine war ends, I think, for instance, like sanctions will probably come off in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and they'd like to take more Russian material. That's right. That they can lower their costs for sure. So some of that material is going to come out of China and into JKT and some of these other places. So someone's going to have to backfill that demand into China unless China slows down capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Who that's going to be, I don't really know, but at least in my mind, that part of it is reasonably constructed. To the extent that Russia can increase production, that'll be interesting. The Yakutia mines in Siberia produce a lot of anthracite that's used as low vol PCI, pulverized coal injection, coke replacement. And that was, the primary source of PCI for Europe. So is Europe going to leave sanctions on Russia? Are they going to take them off? Like now things start to get sort of weird and interesting, right?
Right.
Because we're being antagonistic toward Europe with regard to the Ukraine conflict. Will that in turn make Europe more likely to keep sanctions on Russia and keep the status quo in place?
Right.
I don't necessarily know the answer to that, but these are questions that we need to know how they're going to sort of start to work out.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have to figure out what the trade flows look like when they begin to readjust. The last time when you took all that supply out of Europe, out of a demand center with an index attached to it, prices went bananas. If supply comes flooding back in over a 2-3 month period, we can see the opposite of it. But I think after that dust settles, we're still just kind of where we are. There's not like more supply coming on or less supply. It's just the same amount of supply being redistributed.
Yeah.
The world. That'll affect spot prices. That'll affect physical assessments, all those sorts of things, but net net, not a huge change.
Right. So it's going to be volatile, but, at the end of the year, over the next few months, all things should be constant is what I'm trying to say. So
yeah, I mean, you know, if we had perfect knowledge on China last year, we'd have known that the med space was a short heading into the back half of the year. You know, now that that's already happened, and I'm looking at this, like, I'm not much of a short trader. I'd prefer to like pick a spot to get long, and I think that spot's going to be late 25, mid 26. And there are some companies I think that'll be okay in the interim. I think, like I said, domestic U.S. thermal coal is probably going to be okay. So kind of like Alliance Resource Limited Partners, which sells mostly domestic, is going to have a pretty good year. I think power prices are going to be pretty high. I think gas prices, once we turn on the LNG exports, are going to be high. I think all that's constructive. CONSOL, Core Natural Resources, also sells a big chunk of domestic coal as well on the thermal side.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those businesses will be okay. Hallador Energy, HNRG, another one that it got whacked on all the DeepSeek news because, we're never going to need power again because compute's so cheap or whatever, completely ignoring Jevons' paradox. I think that got down to like 950. It's already back to 11.
Yeah.
I think those things are probably okay. I like NRP, obviously, because you can hide out in royalties for a long time.
Yeah.
Collecting dividends while you wait for the market to turn. I'm still pretty optimistic despite the incredibly bearish tone of Warrior's call last week. I'm still pretty optimistic they'll do well. Is this the year that they'll go gangbusters? No, I don't think so. But I do think it'll be, when Blue Creek, when that long wall comes on and the market, inflects upward, they'll be a really, really excellent performer. So, and then on the thermal coal side, again, like low cost producers, I think from what I understand, there's going to be a bit of a fight for like the 50, the lower grade Newcastle coal, the 5500s. Most forecasters you see in that come down to like, below 80, where it is right now, down to like 75. That'll start to put some constraints on margins, but Yancoal, should be able to make decent profits down there even. So there's still some things to do in the interim. I just, knowing that it's February now, the market should slide into May probably. Like there's no reason to hurry up and establish a position. Like I'd say, start making a shopping list of companies that you're interested in and get to know their price levels. Just kind of wait and watch.
Sure. Yeah. So you took a lot of my questions away, or I answered them. You gave me all of our viewers. There's a good handful or a couple of handfuls of some really good solid companies. I was going to mention to all of our listeners and ask you, but you already said it. Just make a shopping list here. Keep an eye up where they're trading at. And then it looks like maybe towards the end of the year and early next year, so that's when we'll see. We'll probably see good entry points here over the next few months, but that's where we'll see really the coal market be bottom.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things like to focus on this year. I mean, emerging markets are going to do a little bit better. China's been doing well recently. Alibaba's been off the charts. That's turned into my biggest position by no fault of my own. Just went up. I think Brazil's going to have a pretty good year relative to the rest of the world. There are companies down there that I think will be sort of okay. Now the narrative has kind of shifted on iron ore. We think price is going to come down, but as Rio Simandu ramps up, that might be a head scratcher for dry bulk shipping, as that mine ramps up as well. There's biotech, agentic AI, AI as a service, all those kinds of ideas. There's a lot to play with, outside of the natural resources space. And, so even if we have kind of a, period here in 25 where the whole sector kind of slides a little bit, just kind of keep it in mind, Glencore after this last report is probably going to slide a fair amount. They started losing money on coal. They're talking about cutbacks. Copper hasn't quite gotten, off to the races again. So, that's one that I want to own longer term. but not in a hurry to own right now. There's plenty to occupy, I think, our attention.
We
get to the point where we see another upcycle in resources here.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And again, it goes back to the thesis of just start building a shopping list. You don't have to act on it, but start just getting some good quality names and that you gave, and you just get familiar with those names. Real quick, so I had a talk with an analyst. This was about a week or two ago, and I just want you to comment real quick on this because you educated me. 18 months ago, is the difference between met coal and thermal coal? Because I just said, hey, coal's been, what's your outlook on coal, if you would, is what I asked. And that sort of thing is like, trying to liquid natural gas and, solar, wind, and even oil and that sort of thing. And so there's still this huge disconnect between, energy as well as building steel. So if you could comment about that, just the differences, just to educate our listeners that people are not
sure. So the physical difference between met coal and thermal coal is, when you heat up coal in the absence of oxygen, some of it will turn into charcoal and some of it will turn into dust. The coals that turn into charcoal, those are coking coals. And so what we use them for physically is just like you would in a grill, right? You put a layer of coals down, and except in a blast furnace where we're going to heat that from underneath with, by firing natural gas, we're going to lay a layer of iron ore pellets or, fines or lump over top of it. And so the carbon that's in the coke, the coal that's been turned into charcoal, the carbon becomes the fuel source, right? It holds all that heat from the natural gas that you're firing, but it also serves as the reductant to turn FeO2. It will pick off an oxygen, release carbon monoxide, and release molten FeO. Iron with one oxygen. So that's a liquid. That liquid will trickle down through all the little nooks and crannies of the burden, is what we call it. And that's why you need strong coke, because if the burden collapses, the metal can't trickle down to the bottom of the furnace. Okay. Once that has happened, once that reaction is fully complete, then you poke a hole in the bottom of the furnace, you tap out all of the molten iron, and then there's slag that's left over, calcified crap that you want to, not include in your thing. And then you take the FeO, you blow ozone over top of it, you're left with molten Fe, you cast it out into slabs and you roll it out into steel. Add your metallics, do whatever you need to do in order to hit the spec that you're trying to make. But that's the difference, is that, the metallurgical coal makes this charcoal that has varying strength. And I talked a little bit about how weaker coking coals don't provide that. Mm-hmm. If you use too much weak coking coal in your coke blend, your burden collapses. Mm-hmm. So you need that quality low vol, that quality mid vol, high carbon percentage material in order to really have, to make an exceptional. It'll be able to weather the, holding up the burden, serving as a reductant, serving as a fuel source, all that sort of stuff. Thermal coal doesn't do that. It just turns into dust, right? It doesn't agglomerate. So you price off of, instead of pricing it off of volatile content like we do for met coal and or coking coal properties and sulfur, thermal coal is priced off of heat. How hot is it? Central Appalachia, 12,500 BTUs, Northern Appalachia, where Consol is, can be, Pittsburgh 18 could get up to 13,500. If you move out to the Illinois Basin, that's more like 10,500, 11,000 BTUs. The Powder River Basin out in Wyoming is 8,800 BTUs, or 8,600 BTUs, and or 8,400 BTUs, depending on where you are in the basin. So, and if sulfur's high, the price gets penalized. If sulfur's low, you get a premium. So all of those factors, go into pricing the material. But that's basically the difference between all of it. Met coal is a specialty coal that can be used in steel making. Disturb is both reductive of the fuel. Thermal coal that doesn't have that property can really only be used as a heat source. So that's why it goes to power plants.
Yeah. And just for all of our listeners, that was just enlightening to me because I didn't realize that coal was used in making steel. So now it makes sense. Just when we met and I talk about the Chinese and Indian supply and demand, when they grow, they need steel. That's where really coal comes in. So
yeah. And there are, and I mentioned earlier, like there are those coals that can sort of move between markets too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, semi-soft coking coals are really just thermal, you know, high quality thermal coals that have some coking properties, you know, so when you have a situation where you have too much of those and you can't sell them into the met market, you know, that's why the Newcastle premium evaporated. Just traders dump those materials to right size their books into the thermal side just to get them off, just to get them out in the market. Yeah, that happens from time to time. You know, most of the time in the U.S. it happens in the other direction. You know, every cycle is a little bit different as to how that sort of plays out. But you only see them come back to thermal kind of at the end of, you know, you only see met switch back to thermal kind of at the end of a met cycle, which is where we're at.
Yep. Got it. All right, Matt, people want to do business with you. They want to learn more about you. How do they go about doing that?
Yeah, sure. Well, the first thing you can do is you can go to thecoaltrader.com. We have all of our premium articles that we put up on Substack or Mirror over there. We also have some other free articles that are there and some other data offerings that will get, I think, a lot more robust here as we get toward the middle and the back half of the year. There are a few things I want to add. I think it'll be really helpful for folks. Or you can find us on Substack, thecoaltrader.substack.com. Everything that we release from a research or writing perspective is released in both places. You get a little bit more with the data offerings, you know, on the website than you do on Substack, but we really try to communicate the same things to the ostensibly the same audience. It's just a question of, do you feel more comfortable in a Substack environment or having a separate subscription? You can also find me on Twitter at MF Warder. At MFWARDER. We have a private Twitter feed for the Coal Trader subscribers at the Coal Trader. And we also have a little kind of like a Coal Newswire. It's at Coal Newswire is the handle where we occasionally send out tweets of news. I'd like to get that more involved here this year. I'd like to put out more free content if I can. It gets difficult when, you know, like this is second podcast I'm doing today. And then I have calls. It's like, but you know, 5 or 6 hours in the day are taken up. Only so much time you can get out, you know, free articles and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But we do want to make that a priority, as well as developing some interesting data viz tools for subscribers here by the end of the year.
Fantastic, Matt. It's always a pleasure. And just want to thank you so much. And we'll talk again in the next few months.
Okay. Yeah, it's fun. Happy to do it anytime, buddy.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.